I got a story to tell you. It's a shaggy dog story. It was long as we're talking about that record at $600. I'll tell you the story. Oh, gosh. Ray and I and Sue and Buddy took a trip to Mexico City. It must have been 4 to 6 months after my dad died. That's how I remember. He died in December 67. So sometime in 68, we took this trip. We've been talking about it for a while. Flew down to Mexico City. We had to think of the name of my hotel, which wouldn't mean anything now. But we ended up in a fabulous hotel. First night, we were very unhappy with our rooms. We're getting down there. And the next morning, Buddy, who's an early riser anyhow, he was probably up 4 o'clock, and he went down there complaining to the manager. So, because it was not the accommodation we were supposed to have had, we checked in about 8 o'clock at night. So, just in Mexico, it was like, you know. Well, we ended up with a corner suite with, it was so big, we could have a party for 50 people and invested 3 bathrooms in it, 2 bedrooms, so they had, but they had an extra guest bathroom with a big bar. It was open on 2 sides, because we didn't have anybody there, but 2 of us. And I remember the New York Yankees were training there, so it probably was, season opens in April, so it probably was February or March. Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford and all of them. I wish I'd been smart enough to know then that these baseball cards, you know, autographs would be selling for $300 or $400, but at any rate, I went down there with a recorder. We had those things at the store that we used to use when we'd go out of town, particularly if we were looking at some site or we were looking at the store and made some comments and talking to those things. We had 4 or 5 of them. Aaron had one, I had one, I had one, Erling had one, probably a financial guy. Things sold at the time for about $800 or $900.
$800 or $900.
You got a very sophisticated one. The little one's now about this size. This son of a bitch weighed about 15 pounds. It was some heavy son of a bitch. Had a pouch, like sort of like you've got, and I carried it around. At any rate, my wife had fallen in love with a Mexican artist by the name of Nierman. I forgot his first name. Jewish guy. Mexican national. His painting sold for generally $1,000 plus, which was, for me,
a lot of money.
25 years ago, I was no way I was going to spend. First of all, I didn't like it. Very splashy. Albert Marshall had one of his paintings. They had. I don't know, Marshall, a relative in Mexico or something, but they've been down there many times. And they had his book. And we got down there, and he was all over the place. His paintings were, he lived in Mexico City. And we had a cab driver that was going to take us to wherever the place where the gold was. I can't remember, one of the roughest rides. If you ever been to Mexico City, you made that ride, some kind of city about 100 miles away. I thought we were going to die going down there in an old car. Anyway, but before that, he took us around the city, still got his card somewhere, slammed the damn door on his guy, poor guy's hand one day, and inadvertently we get now. We had him about 3 days. One day we took him down to wherever we went. Buddy and Sue didn't go, but he took us to the ruins and a lot of stuff. And, you know, I knew then and I know now that those guys take you to a particular place, they get a commission. Well, they took us to this guy's studio.
Hey, what?
Took us to this guy, artist studio. Ray, he was there. And she saw a painting she liked. And he wanted that damn recorder. And he said, I'll tell you what I'll do. He made a deal. He said, you take this painting, I want that guitar. I'll take it. I said, no, I can't do that. It's not mine. It's about $1,000 swap. Shit, I thought my wife was going to have a fit. She was pissed off. Mexico City was a, in those days, probably still is, not for this guy, he was very successful, very prolific, but it was an art colony. There were a lot of Americans down there. He was not an American. There were a lot of Americans down there because cost of living was so cheap at the time. They had these art shows everywhere. Well, we bought a painting of a little Mexican woman. Still got it with a watermelon on her head. Like it a lot. And paid $30 for it. That's about my price range. While I was down there, we maybe bought a couple of other inexpensive paintings. Maybe collectively we bought less than $150. No, I was not an art. We weren't art collectors. And to spend $1,000 to me for a painting was unthinkable. It's the first painting I ever bought. My father-in-law bought it from Jerry Ray. It's one of Jerry's original early paintings, which I thoroughly enjoyed. She's changed styles. But while we were down there,
and I've seen that somewhere before.
You know, I've had that painting for 35 years, I guess. I've never framed it. And I really like it. My father-in-law wanted to give me a painting for a piece of art for my office. And so we had a display guy at the time, but Ben Money fashioned himself as an artist. And I said, Ben, pick me out something for $50 to spend. So he got this from Jerry, and I loved it.
It's beautiful.
And I can see all kinds.
It's got a lot of color. And
a lot of color. I see a Chinese jump. Anyway, make a long story. This fellow, Leroy Neiman, over here, sports artist. Not the same guy as this guy, Neiman. I've forgotten his name.
I thought there was a connection.
No connection. There's a connection on the story. Well, we looked at a lot of art in the parks, and there were at least, it was pleasant weather, and like it was sort of like what the hell is called the district in New York where on Sunday they put all the artists put their paintings out, the village. You know, all these artists put their, well, they had, must have three areas like that, parks, paintings of my God, there must be thousands of paintings. And most of them very inexpensive, starving artists that were down there. Lots of American. Well, we wandered around down in the area, which I've forgotten the area that they called in Mexico City, where most of the jewelry shops are and things. It's got a name, I can't remember. I've never been back. They also had a lot of artist galleries down there. And I walked in this gallery during one of our, we were down there maybe 10 days. And I saw this guy, Neiman, I never heard of him at that time. He got famous at the 72 Olympics. But his art was already in collections of guys like Edward G. Robinson. He was very popular in Hollywood. He also was very prolific, big handlebar mustache. And I walked in, and there must have been about 12 or 15 paintings in there. They were...
You walked into his studio?
It's a gallery. He didn't live there. Okay. He didn't live in Mexico. The Jewish fellow, they're both Jewish. Okay. This guy Neiman, who was a Mexican national, lived there.
Okay.
Forgotten his first name. Leonardo Neiman or something. But at any rate, but no, this guy's name was Leroy Neiman. I never heard of him. I heard of Neiman. Because Ray went down and wanted to buy one of those paintings. These were paintings which I'd say were about the size of this Joe Namath there, which is a serigraph. And we went in and they were just back from Acapulco. Season was just over in Acapulco. And he had about 25 paintings. Football players, horse races, that's what he did. They were about that size. I've been in there. Oh God, I looked at them. It just struck me as something. I loved them. They were great. They were very, had a very distinctive style. And the guy said, "Dad, you've been in here so many times. It's time to make you a deal. You pick out any four of these you want. I'll give them to you for $500. Four. Shit, I love those things. I stewed on those son bitches. I figured I bought those fucking paintings. I'd have to buy that damn thing for Ray. Well, I traded a camera for $1,000 and $900 to buy another one. I promise you, as God is my witness, this guy's original sell for $100,000 a piece or more.
You are kidding.
He is big, big. He's the premier sports artist in the world.
Really?
And I'd never heard of him. But of course, the price was right for me, but I didn't buy him. That was about 19, spring of 68. I was watching the Olympics of 1972, and he'd been engaged by the Olympic Committee. He was prominent then, but not world famous. And he was up all over. He's got a great big bull moose mustache sort of a deal, General Bull Moose, if you remember.
Yep.
And his art was so distinctive, and he's the sketching. I said, "Jesus, that's my man." I remember seeing him at the Olympics. I hollered and screamed and told the story. But of course, since that time, Tony Malin was a studio, one main gallery in New York that I think distributes from around the United States, and I'm on the mailing list. And they get today $2,500 to $2,750 for a serigraph, of which he produces maybe 300 to 500 of them, depending on the issue. But these were originals. And I promise you, as God is my witness, I could have walked away with those things, and that's my story on that machine, that damn thing. And of course, I didn't know what I was missing if I'd done that.
Obviously.
But you know.
But still, $500 was a lot of money, though.
$500.
You didn't spend that much on the whole trip, probably.
Oh hell, I would say probably, certainly we didn't spend $500 for novelties and things of that nature. You know, it was, you talk about a long time ago. Mexico City was cheap.
Oh
Jesus
man,
Christ. I mean, we stayed in a first rate, I guess what you call it today, a 4-star hotel. But hell, I don't mind. We paid $20, $25 a night. You know,
probably.
But anyhow, I give my wife this story every once in a while. This guy's name, because I like this guy, I love him, and of course, you know, I've never this one over here on the right, although it's signed by Leroy Neiman, Paul Bryant, and is also signed by the artist. It was done for a
poster.
Benefit. It was a poster. That's not what they call a serigraph. The Joe Namath, who's of course an Alabama football player, is. I saw it out in San Francisco when my in-laws bought that for me.
It's a beauty, though.
That's my experience with one of those machines. I didn't have enough judgment to
give him the machine.
Machine, because I'd say probably it wasn't like it was like computers. But a year or so after that, that thing was so impractical because it was heavy, heavy, heavy.
It's like you say. He gave me one for Christmas.
This big, you know, you buy one for $60, $80. I got one. I bought from Radio Shack.
Did Ray ever get the Neiman?
No, never did get it. But she nudged me when she got back. But of course, I guess I haven't done it recently, but over the years, I'd like to tell her this story tonight, because I haven't thought about it in a long time. And she'll say to me, I told you to get them. I told you. I must have gone to the place five times. You know, you go in there and your mouth is just watering.
But you knew you were going to have to buy her.
But if I bought those things, shit, I'd have to buy her that damn.
Oh, ain't no question.
There was no question about that. Wouldn't have been living with her. You know, it's a, I've gotten a lot better. But in those days, you know, hell, I was 68, 78, 88. Just 27, 28 years ago, I was 38, 39 years old. And I sure wasn't prosperous. I had my damn trip budgeted. And to have gone out there and spent another $1,500 to $2,000 for artwork, you know, my mother, who was, you know, strong as moose meat, come back, because she'd known.
She had deducted it. Oh.
Anyway.
That's a good story, though.
True story.
Good story.
True story. It was a true story.
Well, it would have cost you to have to replace the doggone machine.
I'd had to replace it for the store. But as it was only a matter of, I guess, a year, those things were really antiquated. Although we used them a lot in those days. And I recorded the whole trip, and things that we did. It was a wonderful trip.
Better than keeping a diary.
Oh, a lot easier. It really is.
We tried keeping a diary on the China trip, and man, it was arduous.
Well, I keep a diary because we haven't traveled much lately. I keep a diary when I go out of the country. Still got them in here. Otherwise, my problem is. And it's a lot easier to do it that way, but I keep a diary when I go out of the country. The problem is, with me, not that it comes up too much, but someone will say something to me about somewhere else. Shit, I forgot where I went. I have to look because I can't remember.
Well, you go to so many places, on a cruise particularly, you know, so many places in a short time that you get them mixed up. Now, we can't even keep our photos straight without the diary.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when you get back from your trip, until you make another trip, you can remember. But having taken as many trips as you've taken, shit, they sort of run together. I'm talking about
they do.
The ones that were 5 years ago to separate trip that you went on this one. From, it's tough to do. And but they're a lot, it's a lot easier to diary than you can transcribe it. But I don't take my diary in the domestic United States, and we haven't traveled all that much, but I have taken them. First trip I made, out in 1976, outside of Mexico, out of the country, because I went to the Orient on a business trip, but I went to Japan with Osaka, which was the textile city, and then Taipei and Hong Kong. And it was a, you've been, but it was for me not only an education, we've been doing some importing, but through a group, and it was a group I was at when, I guess it probably was a dozen in our group that went. This group of stores we were associated with. It was an interesting trip, very educational. Still got my notes from 1976. With all those goddamn cards, you know how they get over there, but it gives you a card. I never forget how impressed I was of all of the Orientals. The Japanese are so bright. My God. Catch on
like that, don't they?
Oh. They really
They work at it though, man. They're the Chinese work at it. They're good students, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know,
look at these people from India. What good students they are. Some of your fine doctors, yeah.
You know, we see these people, we've talked about this in groups for years. All the problems we got with the blacks. I'm just reading an article. I believe it was the paper this morning. I read it, maybe it was New York Times yesterday. 33% of the black juveniles in their 20s are either in jail, on parole, or just released. 33%. And I read in another article.
That doesn't count how many got away.
Oh, that's right. But that's of the in their 20s. I read an article within the last 3 or 4 months, and I believe I'm correct on this figure, that 12% of the black male population of the United States is in prison. 12% of the black male population, as you say. How many, you know, how many ought to be in jail? Probably that many more. But the point I was going to make is, and there are always exceptions, and not to take anything away from Percy Jones, whose article I read this morning, because, I mean, he's, I don't know what his family had, but, I mean, he's, you know, he's come out of it. But by and large, across the board, they've just never educated themselves, come from these backgrounds.
And well, that's the hard part. They haven't educated.
You see these people come here from Taiwan, Korea, Cambodia, Taipei. Parents can't speak English. They come over not speaking English, and they excel scholastically in the most difficult subjects. I mean, chemistry, physics, medicine. I remember 1 year, at the time I remember reading the article, it's been 10 or 12 years ago, that 14 public and private high schools in Shreveport-Bossier. I don't remember the article. I remember that it was a big article, but 5 valedictorians. Well, this is Shreveport-Bossier. 5 valedictorians that year were of Oriental descent. You know, couldn't have been at that time 250 families in the whole damn area. You think about the Jews, the Irish, and the blacks, and it's the same all over the fucking world. And I just read an article in the New York Times yesterday. I clipped it for my wife to read about the fact that in Israel, where they have brought in 30,000, where the dark ones come from?
Ethiopia.
And 500,000 Russians. Very proud of the fact that they've been able to do this in a country of 5 million people, which would devastate most countries. I mean,
it's 10%.
The Ethiopians in particular had a big march last week because they're second-class citizens. The Jews look down on them too. You know, they got a class situation. They look different there, and because they haven't accepted the Russians too well either. Although the Russians, a high percentage of Russians are, according to this article, are scientists, doctors, engineers, mathematicians. And they
educated the difficult way.
Score higher on the test than the native barns, but there's a big, you know, there's a class differential, which was interesting. I really hadn't thought about in many years how those blacks had integrated into the society. I am told, I haven't seen any of them, but the blacks, they're not like our blacks.
No, no.
Small, you know, smaller features, but they are dark skinned, and they look different. And I don't know if there are any other black Jews over there, but
a lot from South Africa, but they're well educated people down there. A lot of them.
A lot of Jews from South
Africa. Oh, yeah.
I know that this fellow, Goldstone, who was ahead of this International War Crimes Tribunal, is a Jewish fellow because there was a picture of him in the paper with a yarmulke on. You'd look
pretty good indication.
Pretty good indication.
But well, you know, there's what astounds me is, and this goes back into 19. Let's see, Duna. That's 77 or something. So this goes back all further than that, maybe 1970. And Houston,